I got into the car with a drunk driver. I don't really remember much, but I do remember waking up with the car on its side and just hurting. I mean, I'd hurt my neck, I'd hurt my back. The worst part was my leg was shattered. I really didn't know what to feel. I knew that I'd gotten in the car with the drunk driver. That felt like that was my mistake, but I wasn't the one driving and I wasn't the one that caused the accident, so I really wasn't sure how to feel. I talked to my mom and she ended up recommending just calling the advocates. Even though it was complicated and I felt like maybe I'd made a mistake or I felt guilty, there was zero judgment from them. I felt like they were always on my side and they were always doing what was best for me. Really, it gave me my life back. I was able to stop replaying all the decisions I made and I was able to just move forward and really start rebuilding my life because the advocates really took care of everything.
I'm Matt with the Advocates Injury Lawyers. If guilt is keeping you from getting help, just call us. We'll represent you and remind you that you deserve justice.
Vance, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm good, man. How's California?
California is nice. It's sunny. Thank God we're in the summer weather, so I'm loving it.
Okay. So I met you, I think, back in May when I was out there. Mm-hmm. And, bro, your story is amazing. So I thought,
Thank you.
I need to have you on here. So for those who don't know, who is Vance Gamble?
Okay, that's a good question. Vance Gamble is a Black boy from Hartford, Connecticut, grew up loving, the theater and fashion and music. Mm. I went to school for theater and I kind of found my love for styling there. And I've transitioned it into my career and now it's my life passion. That's just a little percent of who I am.
Interesting. And you have several celebrity clients. Would you mind breaking down a few of them all?
Yeah, for sure. I've worked with some really great people, Kim Kardashian being one of them. I've worked with Kendall Jenner, and most recently, in the last 8 years of my life, I've worked with Beyonce.
Nice. Okay.
And that's probably one of the most exciting portions of my career.
That's nice. Sweet. Okay, so growing up, you mentioned you enjoyed theater, right? What was it about theater that drew you to it?
Well, honestly speaking, I always kind of just had a performance spirit in me. When I was younger, I used to perform in front of my parents, my sister and I, for hours, hours and hours and hours and hours. And we used to rehearse and rehearse and rehearse. Let's say, for instance, it was Mother's Day. My sister and I would practice maybe like a week before Mother's Day with this hour-long performance of what we were going to show my father and my mother. Oh. And so as I got older, I kind of like, it was just a part of who I was as far as like singing, dancing. I wasn't really good at acting, but I was just a good performer and I knew that that's where I wanted to be. So I knew at a very early age that I wanted to be in the entertainment industry in some capacity. And so I went to school for theater. It just made sense for me.
Interesting. And so you're in theater, right? Were there any shows in particular that you enjoyed, anything that you saw that really drew you to it?
Yeah. I went to school with a lot of amazing actors, some of which, unfortunately, they don't even act anymore. Mm-hmm. Just because, the different various emotions of the entertainment industry, people's fires get dimmed, and people get discouraged. But when I was coming up in school, I saw like the students that were ahead of me and, the upperclassmen, they were just amazing, amazing actors. Like they were able to really pull a lot of emotion out of the audience to the point where it just inspired me to want to create even more, even more, even more. So that was my first time seeing people in my early adult years that were like me. People that were also a lot better than me that caused me to want to be better. You know what I mean?
I see.
Those were definitely like the most influential people in my beginning years. And I think I was most inspired by a play called For Color Girls, who considered suicide when the rainbow was not enough. Mm. Yeah. Wow.
And what was it about that play and later on the film that really touched you?
I think like just because I was around so many like different actors that had different levels of depth, they really brought a lot of, it was just, it had so much raw emotion in it. It talked about, you know, sex, molestation, toxic relationships. It talked about a lot of things that, you know, Black women have been going through since before I even existed on this earth. You know what I mean? So to put that in a constructed form and actually present it to a group of people, it had so much depth to me. And actually, that play was my senior exit, my senior year. I had to produce a play, and I chose that play, even though it had already been, you know, produced on my campus many times. I decided I wanted to put my own take on it, and it was a huge success. It lasted for about 7 days, and the response from my schoolmates was, it was unbelievable. They still talk about it to this day.
Wow, and how did you spin the story?
I wanted to kind of take experiences from other Black women that I knew that were my age and the women that I saw around in my life. And I wanted to make it relatable for the women that I lived around and that I grew up around. So obviously the original play has, it's about older women. And it's about women that are more mature and they kind of have seen a lot. But at that time I was like 18, 19, and I really wanted to take, I took actually students and girls that weren't even actors, and I put them in my play. There were about five or six girls that I went to school with on the campus, and I was like, you should be in my play. You should be in my play. You should be in my play. Only because their spirits were so beautiful and they had so much depth. I knew that what I saw in them, they would be able to convey what I was trying to achieve. And so it was really good to see girls our age be on stage talking about things that we all can relate to. You know what I mean?
Interesting. And so, okay, so you found these girls, right? Who, and then you worked with them. Interesting. So how hard was it to kind of coach them into acting?
It wasn't hard at all because honestly, in my mind, they were already characters. Like they were already like key components to my life and of my campus life at that school. I went to a small school called Livingstone College, and it's in Salisbury, North Carolina. And it literally was a campus of no more than 1,000
Oh,
students.
I
And
see.
that's including like, you know, first year freshmen all the way to seniors. It's a 4-year college. And so everyone kind of knew everyone. You know what I mean? Everyone knew I was Vance. I was a performer. I was a theater kid. I was the one that was in gospel choir singing. I was just the performer. Everyone knew that about me. So the people that I came in contact with, especially the women, each of them kind of had their own like imprint on who I was and how I navigated on that campus. So it was very easy for me to say, you know, I want Kiera in this. I want Sade in this. I want Alexis in this. Those girls were already just so important to me and had so much impact on my life and my years at school. It was very easy once we got on stage for me to translate to them how and what I wanted them to convey. It kind of was like really natural. I'm really good behind the scenes. I'm really not a on the stage performer type person. I've never been that way.
Okay, so in that instance, it's interesting. So you're basing the revised version on what you knew about them, right? So you're interesting, and that kind of leads into what you do now, right? Where you look at what someone is doing already and you amplify that. Is that correct?
It's really, styling is really about, in my opinion, taking my life experiences and things that I've seen in the knowledge base that I have, and having a client and an artist who's open to taking what they want to express and us combining forces. That's all really fashion is, in my opinion. It's experience turned into image.
Okay. And so how does it work, for example? So someone calls you and says, Vance, I'm looking for a stylist, right? So what are the next steps? How much control do you have? Do they give you a budget? How does it work usually?
There's a lot of different variables. In some circumstances, I have the talent's agent or manager or publicist reach out to me, and let me know that they have a project that they've already, you know, created a budget for, exactly what they want to do, what they want to achieve. Am I able to work within those means? Sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not.
Yeah.
And I'm able to negotiate as far as what they're looking to accomplish based on their goals, and then what the number of looks and budget and different variables. So that's the first circumstance. The next one is where I sometimes have a client that doesn't know exactly what they want at all, which right. is okay also, because I'm able to kind of get to know them a little bit and have a lot of consultations and do my research on them and kind of mold them into what I think would be the best image for them. Mm-hmm. So it can kind of go either way, option one or option two. And sometimes it's also a mix of both.
So are you then presenting ideas to them that they're picking and choosing from?
Yeah. So sometimes I create mood boards about the aesthetic that I kind of want to see as far as the music video or the era of their artistry. And I present that to either management or the talent directly. And then we can kind of sometimes dissect what we do and don't like. So mine is just the initial tone that I'm setting. And then it's really important for me with my clients to make sure that it fits them like a glove, right? It's almost like jeans or a pair of trousers. You buy it from the store, but it may not necessarily fit you the way that you want it to or fit you perfectly. So then you take it to a tailor that will make sure that it fits your body and only your body. You know what I mean? Someone else can't put on those pants once they've been tailored for you and they fit them the same way.
Interesting. And so in instances, for example, where, okay, so question, what happens if a manager has one vision and the artist has another, right? What do you do in that scenario and who tends to win?
Well, usually if they have a difference of opinion, they'll probably more likely come to me and ask me, well, what do I think? And in that circumstance, I'm able to kind of navigate that easily. The more challenging part is if I have a different vision than what management and the artists want, which again, I kind of know how to navigate through those situations, and I know how to, I know how to get the client to where they are meeting the needs of what they want. But also I'm able to implement my vision and what I think is best also.
Mm.
I've been doing this for a long time, so the challenges aren't always that hard.
Okay. All right, so let's go back, right? Okay, so yeah. We're in school, and I think I remember you telling me that you interned for free for a year for someone.
I did.
Okay, so
I did.
What happened there?
So once I graduated, I moved to Washington, D.C., where I started this, an agency with my best friend. It was called Purple District.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a lot of consulting for a lot of different companies and a lot of different fashion houses and people who were looking to get into the fashion industry in D.C., but didn't necessarily know how to navigate in those spaces.
Right.
And that worked out really well for maybe about 4 years, but it wasn't enough for me. And right. Something in my heart and in my spirit was telling me, you know, you need to move back up north. Like I said, I'm from Connecticut. New York is, you know, very close to there. I have family from New York. And so that tri-state area of New York, Jersey, and Connecticut, it's all the same, honestly. And so something when I was living in D.C. told me, you need to move back home. You know, you need to move to New York. And you need to really dive into this fashion industry. If you want to be a part of this community and if you really want to take it seriously, as much as I love D.C., New York is where I know I needed to be. So I moved there. I literally had no money to my name. I backtracking a little bit, while I was working in D.C., I was working at different companies in customer service and in the hotel industry. And I was really good in those spaces, but it just wasn't what I wanted to do. So finally I said, okay, you're going to move to New York and you're really going to take this seriously. And you're not going to have a plan B. It's going to be, you're going to dive in with no safety net and just take the chance and the risk.
Wow.
And so I did. And you're right. I was interning for about, actually it was like 2 years.
2 years.
And I was, it was so strange. I was Airbnb-ing at the time. Airbnb was pretty new. I was Airbnb-ing my family's apartment out while I was sleeping on a friend's floor for those 2 years so that I can make, you know, ends meet for myself. Because at that time, interning was obviously you got no money. It was a different time.
Wow. So you're Airbnb-ing the house to cover your expenses so you could be in the industry. Right?
I
Wow.
wouldn't recommend anyone. If things have changed now with like labor laws and things like that, I wouldn't recommend anyone go that aggressive, but I just wanted it so bad. I was willing to do not anything, but I was willing to do a lot and deal with a lot and sacrifice a lot so that I can, you know, make my way in these spaces.
And so, and during that time, what challenges did you face?
Oh God, you can only imagine not being able to, you know, pay my rent, not having any food to eat sometimes. There were definitely times where I had to, you know, in New York it's very cutthroat. There were times where I had to get evicted from apartments before, and I've literally had to like move from place to place. At once I lost my I didn't lose my family's apartment. At that time they were doing a lot of gentrification in Harlem. And so my family's apartment was one of we got hit. And so I then had to move out, and I was renting out rooms with complete strangers, which was it's very normal in New York. It's not unheard of, but it was a struggle for a very, very long time. Even after I was getting paid, you know, as an assistant stylist or as a secondary, a junior intern, it was very difficult to make ends meet and survive in New York because, as we all know, New York is not a cheap place. It's super expensive. The cost of living is unfortunately not realistic for the everyday person, especially someone trying to get into the fashion industry. So I faced a lot of challenges. Emotionally, I felt like I didn't want to be a failure because a lot of people tell you, you know, the fashion industry, there's no hope for the fashion industry. It's like you're like one out of 8 million people that want to be a stylist, especially me being a black male. So there were a lot of emotional challenges that I faced, a lot of physical challenges that I faced, financial challenges, but I thank God that it worked out in my favor.
Amen. And so during that time, how do you say your ideas? I'm always curious about how adversity inspires, right? So what kind of concepts were you creating during that time? Did you find they were more innovative? Because as a writer, sometimes, I find it depends, but sometimes, people say that people write their best songs when they're going through a difficult time. Did you find you were more innovative during that time?
To be completely honest with you, I was just trying to make it. And I was honestly trying to, I feel like I have more freedom now as someone who's been successful in this industry than when I was first coming up in the game. I feel like in the beginning of stages of my career, when I was interning, I was just trying to prove to myself and to others that I am just as good as you. So I wanted my work to look like theirs. I wanted my creativity to look like the standard of what the fashion industry looked like, if that makes sense. Starting out, I really, as well as people that were my colleagues, interns that were coming up, we just wanted to prove that we're just as good as the Joe McKenna's and the Pat McGrath. We just wanted to prove that we're just as good as the people that were already in the industry at that time. So now I feel like I'm able to pull from the things that truly inspire me. Like I'm a 90s
I
kid. Like
see.
I'm inspired by the 90s. I try and, you know, somewhat pour that into my aesthetic in any of the work that I do because I feel like, in my opinion, those were the greatest times in fashion. Those were the greatest times in individuality. So I've always had and carried those aesthetics with me.
That's interesting. So during that time, of course, it makes sense. You were forced to kind of follow the grain, because you're new in the business. You want to prove that you can do what's already been done. But of course, now you have your own space, you have freedom, you're able to show what you want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
You mentioned the 90s, right? And people being individuals, and I do agree with you that something about that time, right? Ironic. I don't know if it's because there wasn't social media, so we saw less people, right? But someone stood out. They really stood out. What do you think happened culturally and in zeitgeist to change that?
I think that unfortunately the industry specifically speaking of the music industry, because that's when where I was most inspired by. I have a caption on my Instagram that says fashion, music, art.
Right.
And those are the three components in the 90s that really inspired me to be the person that I am today. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I feel like the times have shifted to where it's so competitive. Everyone is interested in being what the standard of cool is, or what the standard of beauty is, or what the standard of hot music is, as opposed to where we were raised in, like, everyone had a voice. They wanted to say completely different things. Some people wanted to say the same thing, but it was always their voice. And I feel like in the industry now, it's become a clickbait situation versus a expressionism.
Mm. And do you feel that's partly to do with the finances? So, for example, in the 90s, right, if you were an artist and you sold a million copies, you sold a million copies, right? There was money in the business. Mm-hmm. Do you think that the how do I put this? Do you feel like the fact that there's less money in the business, right, has caused this in a way?
Yeah, for sure. I think that obviously money is the main foundation of why things are lacking. Mm-hmm. But I do. But there, the thing about it is, there is money still here in this industry.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that we lack now is people are not willing to invest in everyone as much as they were in those times.
Good point.
And I think that without that funding and that capability of having access to so many things, there's only so many things that an artist is going to want to do before they conform to what everyone else is doing.
That's a good point. Because if you look back on the charts, even like across the industry at large, right, there were so many different people and they all smashed it because they had the investment. So the consumer wins,
right?
Because you get to enjoy different ideas from different people, right? And all of it feels mm-hmm. very expensive. It all feels very highbrow. Mm-hmm. Whereas mm-hmm. now, if you have limited resources, you have to get in where you fit in. So everyone's trying to slip into the same mold, hoping that they break.
So right.
Interesting.
I mean, think about it now. Labels want you to come ready.
Yeah.
Labels want you to come artist ready. They want you to, before they even sign you or give you any type of funding, they want you to have X amount of followers. They want you to be able to have X amount of impact with your music. I come from a time where artists were signed and didn't release music until 3 years after they were already signed. You know what I mean? Like there was a lot more artist development. There was a lot more willing of an investment. Now, I will say in those times, a lot of those artists were being cheated out of their money.
Okay.
And now we live in a time where artists are getting their just due or more than what they were back then. But I do think, unfortunately, because there's a lot of light that's being exposed on financial manipulation, that things have changed for artists.
Interesting. All right. So going back to your journey for a bit, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So you've interned for 2 years now, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So then how do you go from that to styling Beyonce, to styling Kim K? Like,
So when I was coming up, there were three levels to your career path. Mm. You started off as an intern, and you then transitioned from an intern to a stylist assistant. And mm. then once you've had X amount of experience in that field, people began to hire you as a lead stylist. So when I was interning, I was with this woman, I won't say her name, but there was an assistant who was actually a friend of mine. And we were working with this stylist for a very long period of time. And I was working in the intern capacity, and my friend at the time was working in the stylist assistant capacity. And there was a circumstance to where we had a shoot a very early morning, and my friend she wasn't answering the phone. She didn't show up. She was a no-show. And so the stylist looked at me when we were on our way to the shoot, as I'm calling my friend, like, where are you? What's going on? Where are you? Where are you? The stylist looked at me and said, you know, you've been doing this for a very long time with me. You know the ropes. You can do this with your eyes closed. I am moving you up to a stylist assistant.
Wow.
So from that day, I never interned again. I never accepted intern positions. I never worked for free. It literally, in that instance in the car where she said, I'm moving you into this position, you have no choice but to perform. I knew that I had to do what I already knew that I had within me. I was just waiting for the opportunity. And it's unfortunate that my friend didn't show up for me to get that opportunity, but it's just interesting, you know, how things work themselves out. And so after I started assisting styling, I started getting my own jobs and my own relationships. Which took a long time.
Interesting. So how many years from that incident to that point? Or months even?
How many years from me going from a style assistant to getting my own jobs?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
About 8 years. I've
Wow.
just now in the last 5 years started getting my own styling jobs.
Wow.
And if I'm being completely candid, when I first started working with Beyonce, I was working in the assistant capacity,
Right.
which I mean, obviously that's just how things go when you have an artist of that magnitude. There's one lead stylist and there's other assistant stylists. Now, when I started with Beyonce, I was literally junior level. I mean, entry level. I literally was doing the things, the little tidbits and errands that need to be ran. And, you know, 8 years later, here I am co-styling with my colleague KJ Moody,
Wow.
and we just recently did the Renaissance tour.
Yeah.
So it's been a great journey.
And so obviously you mentioned Renaissance, but I believe you also worked on Lemonade, right?
I did work on Lemonade. Lemonade was during my earlier years. It wasn't with KJ.
Right.
It was with a woman by the name of Marnie Sinafonte.
Okay.
And Marnie is actually who brought me on with Beyonce. The first job that I did with Beyonce was the 2016 MTV Movie Awards.
Interesting.
Actually, no, I take that back. That was my first time actually working with Beyonce. Lemonade, I was working on the movie, but because I was an entry-level assistant, I would send them clothes and send them things as they were shooting. So I wasn't even really on set for Lemonade.
I see.
I think I flew down there one time. It was me, myself, and like four other assistant stylists, and we prepped in New York, and we got so much stuff. We didn't really know what we were prepping for. We didn't know that it was at the time for Lemonade, this visual album that
Right.
kind of changed the game.
Yeah.
But we were kind of just working in entry level, completely different from how the capacity that I work in now. But yeah.
Amazing. So as you're sending the clothes, is there anything in what you're sending that gives what the film was about at the time?
Kind of. I knew what it was about.
Right.
And Marnie was very, honestly, if I'm being completely honest, Marnie Sinafonte taught me everything that I know. She literally is an OG. If you guys are not familiar with Marnie Sinafonte, I urge you to look her up. She is literally one of the goats. She has worked with the greats, from Lauryn Hill to Salt and
Wow.
Pepper to Ciara to Beyonce to so many artists. But she obviously expressed to us what she was looking for and what we needed to accomplish the look and the direction. Obviously I knew what the aesthetic was,
Yes.
but I had no idea what the movie was going to look like until it came out. Like it completely exceeded my expectations, and it was so different from what I could have even conceptualized in my own mind, honestly.
Thing about that movie is in many ways historical, right? And based on
Yeah.
reconstruction. So as a stylist, how much does history and knowing about it play into your role?
Well, it's so important. I think when we're talking about the greats like Beyonce, Michael Jackson, or any of these artists that have such impact, you can't really know where you're going until you know where you come from. You know what I mean? And you have to pull from so many different genres and different experiences, not just from the present, but also from the past, because it's a clear testament of what's going on in the world. I mean, think about the Lemonade Project when Formation came out, and it was talking about, the issues in New Orleans and police brutality. We're still dealing with that right now.
You
So
still.
much as to the point where someone, a woman by the name of Sonya Massey, was shot in the face, last week or the week before last. It's like these things are constantly revolving and constantly happening to the point where I completely admire Beyoncé for creating that Lemonade album because it struck a chord in making a lot of things uncomfortable with a woman with such a huge platform speaking on such serious topics.
And also at her own risk as well, because when you're that massive and you're that big, you could easily play it safe, right?
Easily,
But people don't
yeah.
realize the, even let's be honest, as far as the audience, right? If you're used to having an audience which is very like diverse, let's say, right?
Yeah.
For you to make an album which is so proudly black, right? And addressing issues that are very specific, that is a very brave thing to do. Consider, you know what I'm saying?
It's beyond brave, and it's also super vulnerable, even with her talking about her own personal experiences and things that she shared with that visual album. She put a lot at risk, and I think that's what makes greatness. And I remember when we did the Super Bowl, where Beyonce performed with Bruno Mars, and the wardrobe alone was so black. There had so much blackness. I remember the dancers were wearing afros and leather, and they were wearing berets, and it kind of was a nod to Michael Jackson when he did the Super Bowl, but it also was a nod to so much of our black history. You know what I mean? So that was a huge moment and a pivoting moment in my career also.
I mean, you're doing gigs that are that massive. Can you sense how big it will be before it happens? So, like, are there times where you just know within yourself, okay, this is the big one?
I think that when I work with Beyonce, I know that things are going to be big, but you never really know what the response is going to be until it happens. And I think with any artist and any stylist and any creative director, you're always hoping and hopeful that the consumer will digest it in the way that you're trying to
Course.
give it off. You
That
know what I
was
mean? So when we did Lemonade and it at that point, it came out and I saw it. I was like, we did something unbelievable here. And it doesn't, it's more than just a stylist. It's more than just a creative director and dancers. It's all of us coming together behind this woman to create a vibe and a message. And no one is more important than the other when we're all working together to create this moment in time. And that's why I really appreciate Beyonce for the art that she puts forward because she makes it very clear that everyone is so important in the direction that she's trying to push.
100%. I think the one thing that I've always heard about her, just from people I know, like yourself, is that it's very collaborative, right? Where
Yeah.
there's respect for everyone, and I think that from my experience with so artists, right? I think the best artists are the ones who at the forefront are the forefront, but when they're behind the scenes, really respect everyone who is behind the scenes, right?
Absolutely. I think with any artist, like you said, like it's that's the whole people purpose of why you hire people, right? Like there's people who solely have expertise in I don't know, painting the floors for set. You know what I mean? There's someone that specifically expertise in putting the tape on the floors to show us exactly where our movement should be. There's someone specifically for holding the photographer's second camera. Each and every person and individual that's a part of a project is so crucial and so important to make sure that the artist's message is going to be effective, not just done and put out, it's effective.
100%.
So yeah.
It's interesting. And so when you are working with artists and you are developing their ideas, right? In a sense where, sorry, as in developing what you're going to present to them, right? How much freedom do you have to say, for example, yeah, let's just say you're working with a new artist and they have a particular sense of style that you say, listen, you may like that, but knowing what you know, it may not work. How much freedom do you have to kind of tell them no?
I don't necessarily know how much freedom I have, but I can tell you I have no problem telling someone I don't like this. I know you may like it, and if you like it, we'll do it. I want you to know, as a stylist and in my expertise, this doesn't look good. And 9 times out of 10, it's usually swayed in my favor, or we figure out a common ground. But I have no problem telling an artist, a client, anyone, I do not like this. Because I feel like I'm doing a disservice to them if I become this yes man, like, oh, that looks great, this looks amazing, or I'm not pushing my client enough to make sure that they're getting recognized in the fashion community. That's another part of styling. It's not just about getting someone dressed, but it's about making sure that they're being seen and recognized for your work. It kind of frustrates me when I see stylists in this industry that are just getting by, and I know they're getting not only paid for their work, but they're also being recognized for their work, and the work is a bit lackluster or very lazy. You know what I mean?
So it's really about pushing the envelope.
It not a, not the thing about it is everyone can't push the envelope. Are you doing your best job as a stylist for this client? And if you can lay your head down at night and know that you gave them your best, amazing. If you know that you're just getting by and sliding and just picking up a check or getting accolades that you know you don't necessarily deserve, that's where I think the issue lies.
Interesting. All right, so speaking of that, right? One of the things I often see when it comes to male artists is the criticism that male artists don't go as hard as female artists do with fashion, right? Do you think that's true? And if it is true, why do you think that is?
I think at one point in time there was a lot of insecurities in men's fashion, but I feel like over the last 10 years, some men are dressing better than the women. I feel like things are changing and shifting so much in the industry. A lot of these male artists in particular, they are really wanting to step outside of the box, so much as to where we've even had Rihanna say that ASAP Rocky dresses better than her. And she has to go and change her outfits based on what he
That is
wears.
crazy.
So I think that some guy, it only takes one or two guys to really push the envelope to where other guys have the freedom to do the same. So I feel like we're starting to see a change in the industry. I remember when I was growing up, I still love stoning. So if it has stones, rhinestones, bling, I'm sold. Give it to me. And I've always been like that since I was younger. And I remember I used to get tease a lot, or just like not understood, because people be like, why are you wearing all that stoning? Guys don't wear that. Guys don't wear bling. Now, everywhere you turn around, when you see it in the stores, when you see it in the music videos, when you see custom things that are made, guys are wearing so much stoning more than the women now. Men's
And
fashion has just changed.
so why is that? So how do you think that changes? Is it, for example, designers making choices? Actually, also, is it stylists putting the artists they work with in certain things, which then lead to the cultural change? What would you say inspires that change?
I think it's a mixture of both. I think it's definitely the stylist, but it's also the artist. I think that that is a good thing that I am seeing with the industry nowadays. I think that men are starting to feel a little bit more free, black men in particular, whether they're singers or rappers or actors. I think that we're moving in a society to where black men are slowly being able to express themselves, whether it be through fashion or it be through, any type of art form. So, like I said, it only takes a couple of artists. When I think of people like Future, who's styled by Bobby Wesley, Future is constantly pushing the envelope. He's constantly doing things that and wearing things that are super luxe, super, while still remaining masculine, but they're also one of ones, super unique. So once Future puts that on, his other colleagues and counterparts are gonna say, look, Future got that on. I wanna wear something like that too. And so it starts to spread like a wildfire, this freedom in men's fashion, to where everyone is starting to be like, oh, I can dress better than that. I can dress better than that. Oh, I wanna dress, you know what I mean? So there becomes this confidence builder that is breaking down the walls of what masculine fashion is.
Yes. All right, interesting. So speaking of, right? So let's just say you are an aspiring artist, right? And you're unsigned, you're living a normal life, but you want to present yourself in the way that you want to, right? But you're 5 to 5. As a stylist, How does someone marry their fantasy with their reality without getting fired?
Okay, ask me the question one more time. I want to make sure that I'm answering
In
correctly.
the sense where, I know a lot of like artists, for example, right? And one of the difficult things they find is that when they go to meetings after work, right, they want stars, but they can't because they just left work, right? So are there ways for, let's say, the pedestrian artists, right, to implement their future sense of style into their current circumstance?
Yeah, I think it starts with the risk and the nerve. That's the first thing. Before we're even talking about getting the piece or getting an article of clothing, I think it's about having the risk and the nerve to want to change your image or tweak your image. I think it's a beautiful thing when someone says, you know what, I'm a chameleon and that season of my image is over and now I want to change to something else. So I think the first thing is having the nerve. Secondly, I think it's about identifying who you want to be. What do you want to say in your clothing? Take me for instance. I am very much like glam mixed with street style. I get a lot of my references from the 90s. I get a lot of my references from the hood. I get a lot of my references from just black people in different areas. And I like to throw a little glam on there. But if it has sparkle and it has all those things, I love that. I know that that's the message that I want to present to anyone when they meet me. So it's important to have the nerve, also identify who you want to be and what you want to say, and then you'll start finding those items that say that. Half of the battle of having fashion identity is knowing who you want to be and what you want to say. That's half the battle right there.
Interesting. So it's about having the confidence to say, to start before you have the means.
Absolutely. And also just have a point of view. It's fine to look at, the people next to you or what you want to look like, but what is your point of view? What does Vance want to say when, his look speaks before he even opens his mouth? You know what I mean? What do you want to portray to people before you even open your mouth and speak?
Right. Interesting. So speaking of visual languages, right, Renaissance spoke very loudly, right? So can you tell us about the origins of that project on a fashion front, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah.
So with Renaissance, I think it was presented to us. So Beyonce's creative director, his name is Andrew Mackatzy.
Right.
He and Beyonce came up with this amazing concept and presented it to myself and as well as the other stylists. And each of us had our own departments. KJ Moody being the lead and my colleague, we wanted to provide something that none of the other stylists were presenting. So we wanted to take our experiences and where we come from, and really implement that into the Renaissance tour visuals. So, I was raised around ballroom. As a black gay man, I was raised around a lot of flamboyance and beauty and color. And so I wanted to implement that in my point of view, like I was saying, to this tour. So when I started doing my research and like figuring out what I wanted to say and who I wanted to be as far as my voice in this project, the word camp came to mind. Very camp, very flamboyant, very ballroom. So obviously, there were amazing styles all throughout all of the stylists throughout the tour, but I think what made KJ and I's point of view super special is it was personal and it came from something that we've grown up with. Ballroom has been a part of our culture since before I was even again on this earth. So I really wanted to translate that level of freedom, that level of creativity, and that level of flamboyance with our looks. And KJ obviously was on the same accord.
Interesting. So, would you say that subcultures play a really big part in creating the mainstream culture?
Oh, I think it plays a major part, if not all. I mean, when you're looking at artists throughout all the world, and you think about people like Mary J. Blige. Mary J. Blige is known for her boots. Mary J. Blige is a girl from New York City who used to, run the streets. We've heard her story, but for some reason, those boots were the most iconic thing that people remember, to the point where now she has a boot collab with Giuseppe Zanotti. So where we come from is going to always play a crucial factor in the things that we do. I grew up around a lot of women. My mother has 3 sisters, so it's 4 of them. My mother has always been into fashion. She's always been into looking regal and classy and beautiful. And I grew up watching that. I grew up seeing her and her sisters get dressed, going to church or going out or getting ready to for a night on the town. There's just so many different facets of a Black woman that I was inspired by, and I carry that into my everyday fashion.
Interesting. And so as you're pulling from all of that and you're sharing the days of Beyoncé for Renaissance, right? How does it feel when you're seeing people then, come to the show, for example, and then see what you've done? Do you realize how impactful you are? Can you appreciate it?
Yeah, I think when you're in it and when you're creating it, you kind of have blinders on and you just are so focused on doing a great job. And I'll tell you, when I was on tour and I saw those different people, coming and giving their own point of view on our point of view, it really touched me. And those are the moments where I'm like, wow, we did a thing here again. Like I said, when we were working with Beyoncé with Lemonade, you don't really realize it until the response is given. Like, wow, people were impacted by this. People are affected by this. People feel liberated by this. I saw so many different renditions of people who dressed up in the looks that we created for Beyoncé, things that we were working with designers for months. So to see people, recreate that and give their point of views, it just honestly is the most touching thing that a stylist could ever experience.
It's interesting because when you so when I started this podcast, the point of it was to meet the minds behind the music, right? That includes stylists because you bring I'll say visual life to the music, right? And you and the ideas that you put forward, right, especially in this case of Beyoncé, where the main focus has been touring, right? And not really visuals, that your work on this project really brings life to the tracks. If that makes sense, or extends the life of the tracks. So how of the song of the album's lyrics inspired what you did?
Well, I can give you one good example from Renaissance. In Heated, Beyoncé says, "Fan me off, I'm hot, like Solange Chanel, lock me up in jail." So for me and KJ, we got our lives when that song, we're like, this is fire. So it was really important for us to have matching fans with our looks, just in case Beyoncé ever wanted to bust out the fan. You know what I mean? It's those type of thoughts, and you're absolutely right. Lyrics do match with visual entertainment. We wanted things to have a lot of sparkle. Beyoncé talks about being dripped in Coco Chanel, lock me up in jail. And then she also says in her line, "Uncle Johnny made my dress, that cheap spandex, she looks a mess." So there was a level of tackiness and cheapness that we wanted to have with our looks, if that makes sense. We wanted it to look like it was homemade, like somebody was sitting in their chairs for hours working on these looks that they were going to wear one time at the ballroom. These are the things that happened in history, things that I've seen off of firsthand. I remember a close friend of mine, she's from the ballroom scene, and me growing up not really understanding what it is and being around it, I saw these house kids work on these looks for hours and days on end, and they presented at the end these magical pieces of work. There was a sense of talent that can't really be matched, you know what I mean, in the ballroom community. And with those lyrics, that inspired us to have that same aesthetic with some of our looks also.
That's amazing. And so when you create these clothes, right, where do they go when the show is wrapped?
She keeps all that stuff. It all belongs to her. Some of it, obviously, we are repurposed or reused for the future. It really just depends on what's happening in the future. But there are so many designers that were not able to be used, and I think Miss Tina has spoken about this before. There were, even after the tour was over, there was about 100 some odd looks that were not worn. And I me personally, I have so much gratitude for those designers, as well as the designers that were actually selected, because they all had a huge impact on this era. And who's to know what will happen with them in the future? They still live on, you know what I mean?
Right. Interesting. Speaking of impacts, right? One of the things that's most interesting to me is the way in which Black culture in the US influences culture, well, pop culture in the East, right?
Yeah.
And what happens in music sometimes is that if a writer's done quite well in, let's say, American music or British music, they'll be invited to go and do K-pop and J-pop. Have you found that since working with Beyonce, you've been getting calls to work with artists overseas?
Yes, actually. I've been with Beyonce for a very long time. So I think as we continue to grow, the recognition from all over the world gets larger and larger. And there are 100% artists that I think are super talented that have reached out to me. Yeah. One artist that I do want to work with from the UK, I think she's so dope.
Yeah.
She goes by the name of Bree Runway.
Oh, Bree, yeah.
Oh my gosh, I think she is just so talented. And she's one of those girls that she's just got it, honestly. I think she just gets the aesthetic that she wants to portray and provide and present, and she executes it every single time. I don't think there's been a time where I've seen her where I'm like, she missed the mark. She gets it every single time. I think she's amazing.
Interesting. Okay, so beyond Brie, are there any other British artists who you're feeling, who you want to work with?
Yeah, I love Tiana Major. I think that she's so talented. And we met a couple of times, and I think she's so sweet. Like, I think she's definitely someone to look out for.
Yeah.
Who else? I mean, obviously, I think Jessie J is fab. She's an OG in the game. Yeah.
Interesting. So, bro, there was an interesting story that came out, I think, last year, maybe 2 years ago, where some of the fans were stalking, I think, your Instagram page, and they inaccurately thought that you hinted at a Beyonce and Lady Gaga telephone follow-up. Did you see that?
David, can you hear me?
Yeah, hello.
Okay, hello? You were breaking up. Can you repeat that? I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, I was saying, hold on, let me pause this for a minute. Hold on.
Okay.
Here we go. So, yeah, sweet. No, there was a story that came out where the fans inaccurately thought that the styling team hinted at a Beyonce and Lady Gaga trilogy for telephone, right? How difficult is it, for example, when you are like sharing your content, for example, like I know you post a lot on your stories, right? Knowing that fans see something and take the wrong thing from it.
Yeah, that situation was absolutely insane. And I've actually never even brought it up until now. But I think for me, anyone who knows my story, like my stories on Instagram, or they know just my artist expression, I'm always posting things that inspire me. Literally things from the past, things in the present, things that I've worked on, things that other stylists have worked on. I just literally have used my Instagram story as a melting pot of things that inspire me so that I can inspire others.
Right.
So when that happened, I had, unbeknownst to me, I had no idea that, you know, the fans were thinking, or there was speculation that Gaga and Beyonce were going to make another record. So when that happened, oh my goodness, my Instagram blew up. And I think what the most important takeaway I think that fans should have is that everything that is going to happen will happen. You know what I mean? For me, I don't think that it's important for me to even pay attention to those things, because I continuously want to inspire others regardless of what the post is or what it has to do with or what relation it has. I just want to use my platform as a means to remind people of what we did in the past and things that we could possibly do in the future.
Yeah. And I think that's it. I mean, even like I'm looking at your page today, for example. I know you're posting Lil' Kim. I think your page really is a in its own way, your art. It's an extension,
Yeah.
right? You know what I'm saying? So it was funny that they saw, so what was it? They saw a picture of Bob on your story and assumed that was the hint.
Yeah. I think one of the other stories in the future, I mean, if you tapped a couple more, it was I think I posted Britney Spears. And I think I got some responses like, oh my gosh, Britney Spears is on the new Cowboy Carter. Britney's, you know, so there's always going to be assumptions or speculations, but honestly speaking, that's what a consumer does. And it really has nothing to do with me as someone who's working on a team.
100%. All right. So, for example, so if someone's listening to this and they want to get into styling and they're unsure how, let's say, for example, they're living in a small town, they have ideas, are there safe ways for them to share ideas with people online without being stolen from?
I think it's a very thin line. My first recommendation would be, as to anyone from a small town, because I'm from a small town, I think the most important thing as someone that wants to break into this industry is to know your history. You need to do a lot of fashion research. You need to know about the fashion that came before you were here, the fashion that came before your parents were here, the fashion before your grandparents were here. Try and go back as far back as you can and really study the past all the way to the present time so that you have so many things that you can pull from that can create something that has never been done before. And also, I think, because people ask me all the time, don't you get, annoyed when you post something on your story and someone screenshots it and posts it on theirs? And in their defense, I always say, nothing under the sun is new. And those images and those references, they don't belong to me anyway. They're literally things that were created for me to be inspired that I'm just sharing to inspire others. So there's nothing that someone else can do or post or steal that's going to take away from the core of your talent. So that's what I can say in regards to
Interesting.
that.
And so speaking of your talent, right? Are there any ambitions to launch your own clothing line at some point?
I used to, when I was younger, envision that. I actually taught myself, how to sketch. And, I think as I've gotten older and more mature in this career, I've been able to understand that styling and being a designer is two different things. And sometimes, while sometimes those worlds can meet, you can't ask a lawyer to be a janitor or a janitor to be a school principal. I think that I have such a reverence and respect for designers. There's no way I would be able to do that. Maybe in the future, everything's possible, but I think I even down to tailoring. When I'm working on a job, I hire tailors because I know that there are tailors in this industry that can literally take something apart and put it back together again, and you would never know that it was into a million pieces. You know what I mean? There are tailors that can fit something so perfectly to someone. There's no way that I can do that. And that's just like I know that there's some people that can't style in the way that I do that. So maybe somewhere down the line. But to be completely honest, I'm really into event planning. Something completely outside of the fashion industry. I've actually planned about seven weddings. I planned my sister's wedding.
Oh, that's so lovely.
About 8 years ago. And once I lay this fashion robe down, I am going to go into event planning.
And what is it about event planning that you enjoy so much?
I just think that I love experiences. I've been, since I was 17, 18 years old, I've loved to party. I like to go out. I like to go to the club. I like to go to lounges. I like to go out and eat. I just have always liked to put on some clothes and step out. I think that there's nothing more beautiful, especially with age, to when you're 18, you're going to the ragers, the big club, and then you get older in your 40s and you want to go to something a little bit sexier, a little bit more grown. And I think I might get that from my mom. My mom was super, super active when she was younger, as far as just putting on, like I said, beautiful clothes with her
Right.
sisters and either going to lunch, or she used to party apparently when before I was born. But what I feel like with event planning, I'm able to create aesthetics and take what I've learned in the theater and kind of put it into people's experiences, you know?
So there is that there's a thread, right, where it's creating experiences. So with styling, would you say that you're creating the experiences through fashion, right?
100%, yeah.
With theater, the experience through story, and then event planning, the experience through making memories.
Absolutely. That's super important to me. I've been doing, I think I'm going to start back up again. I haven't done it since I moved to LA, but when I was living in New York, I used to do birthday parties for myself, and there was a theme every year. I think for my 30th, I did a Great Gatsby theme.
Oh, nice. Okay.
I think
20.
when I the next year I did after the I did a hotel theme, and it was called the Grand Gamble Hotel,
Nice.
and it was after it was created after the Grand Budapest Hotel, which is a film that I am absolutely obsessed with, and I just created mood boards and I gave people fashion boards on how to dress, and it was just so exciting for me to create like this space and this environment for something that I know my friends and my colleagues may not have ever experienced in their lives. I know so many people that have never even put on a suit. I know a lot of men that have never worn a tux. I know a lot of women that have never put on gowns or gone out to a fancy event to wear a black tie or white tie. So I want to be able for us as Black people to have all of those experiences, and I think it's something that we lack. I know a lot of people that haven't been to weddings.
Wow,
They've never been to a wedding a day in their life, you know?
And so speaking of that, and speaking to that, do you think that fashion and plays a role in self-esteem?
100%.
Okay.
I know it has to do with mine.
How so?
Growing up, I wasn't the standard of like what a cute teenager or a cute older guy, you know what I mean? I was thick, I was chunky, I was brown skinned, and in this in lifestyle, unfortunately, the standards of beauty, which have changed tremendously since I was younger, they were not what I was. So I think for me, I found a safety and security net in fashion. And that's how I expressed myself. And in my mind, especially in high school, I was always like, oh, I may not be the cutest, but I'm definitely the flyest. I'm definitely dressed the best in all this room. So fashion was definitely a confidence builder for me because it was something that soothed my insecurity until I obviously became older and was able to handle that like an adult.
It's funny, so I'm speaking to my barbers. I have one in London and then one in California. And the one in London told me a story about the fact that when I was a teenager, he was a bit lost, right? And then there was a program in our neighborhood which helped him get into barbering, right? And I think about how, for example, finding your passion and having time to hone in on a skill is so important for young people, because if it's the thing that pulls you out of a really negative circle, for example, like with yourself, right? Who's to say if you didn't have that, you might have gone down, let's say, the wrong path. But having something to
Absolutely.
believe in pull you through and now look at you. You know what I'm saying? So
100%. I think with anybody, especially kids that are creatives, I know that the arts saved my life. I know that the arts was literally the saving grace for me because it was the only way that I can express myself. I was a young Black boy who was gay. I went to a Catholic school all the way from third grade to eighth grade, and then I went to a predominantly Black school from ninth grade all the way to my senior year. So I was different. I was different from the kids that were from the Black school that were together all the way from kindergarten all the way to high school.
I
And
see.
I didn't really necessarily fit in with the white school because I had Black experience. I was a Black boy in a predominantly white school, Catholic school. So I've always felt like I always fit in, but I was always different from where I necessarily was, just a little bit.
Right.
And I was able to express that through the arts, through acting and theater, through fashion and wardrobe. I was able to express my individualism, and it literally, I know that it helped me as a child and a young kid.
Wow. And now you are inspiring other people to follow their path and their journey.
I'm glad. I had someone tell me the other day, an Instagram DM, they wished me a happy birthday. And this gentleman said to me, "Thank you for inspiring young Black boys to be themselves and thrive in this world."
Wow.
And that touched me so much, because I think that may have been the first time any young kid has ever said that to me.
Wow.
It was super impactful, and it literally lit another fire under me.
Wow, wow. So speaking of fires, what's next for you?
I think that I am looking to find a new artist, a musician, preferably a female. I'm open to men, obviously, too. I love guys. But I want to find a new artist who's willing to start from the bottom and grow with me so that we can create magic. I think that when I think of the stylists that came before me that inspire me, Marnie Sinafonte, Eric Archibald, June Ambrose, these are three people that started from the beginning with artists and grew and completed eras of time with them in the fashion community. Marnie is completely responsible for the entire Miseducation of Lauryn Hill era, the only album that she's ever had. So I think that in this moment in my career, I am looking to build an era with an artist that is willing to really go the distance and take the journey with me.
Okay. That's amazing. So question, I always wondered this, right? So with styling, because you're not designing the clothes themselves, but you are creating the motifs, right? If, for example, the artist you're working with signs, let's say, a clothing line deal, right? Is there a way to guarantee you get a cut from what you've created? Because in a way...
Oh, absolutely.
Right, because obviously it's your IP, right?
Right. Absolutely. So, for instance, when you think about Ivy Park, you know, I've worked on Ivy Park since the beginning that it started. Marnie was one of the creative designers for that.
Right.
And with any collab or with any artist that's creating a line, obviously people have to get paid and there's compensation, but then you also own rights, certain rights to your designs, to your ideas, and you're compensated for that. So I think obviously styling and designing are two different things, but they can definitely marry one another and they go hand in hand. You can't have a designer without a stylist and vice versa.
Okay, interesting. And so you mentioned looking for new artists here. Any particular genres you're looking for? Any particular vibes? Are you looking for the new so-and-so? Or do you know what I'm saying? Is there someone you have in mind currently, right? Or a kind of artist you're looking for?
I do not have a specific genre of artist that I'm looking for, mainly because obviously music is my first love, and I know so many types of music, and I'm open to all different types of music. Country music, people really don't know this about me, but country music is my first love, one of my first loves.
Oh,
and
interesting.
Yeah.
Hey.
I love country. I don't think there's a specific genre that I'm looking for. And honestly speaking, there's not a specific type of artist that I'm looking for.
Right.
Because I'm open and inspired by so many.
Right, right. Interesting. All right, so country music, right? So did you work on Cowboy Carter?
I did work on Cowboy Carter.
Okay, so how did that experience differ from Lemonade and Renaissance?
I think I, as far as the styling is concerned, we just pulled from different types of experiences, and obviously Beyonce shared what she wanted to accomplish, and she kind of just pulled the trigger and let us go.
It's amazing.
But again, with Renaissance, there was a specific niche that I was trying to accomplish, and the same for Cowboy Carter.
Right.
Cowboy Carter is a bit more, it's a bit sexier. There's a bit more of a internal, sexy provocative badass, if you will. So whereas Renaissance was more of a movement, there was things that we were speaking on as far as like love and pushing the envelope and freedom for all and liberation. So it's just about honestly creating a different character.
Each one, right? And
Yep.
the question, were there any, for example, textbooks or books or artwork that you pulled from for Cowboy Carter, excuse me, for Cowboy Carter?
Yeah, not necessarily textbooks, but for me personally, no. But I find myself pulling from a lot of movies.
Okay.
I think that because I come from the theater, there are a lot of references in movies
Right.
that you can pull from. Specifically, there was this movie that I specifically know that I looked at for Cowboy Carter called The Quick and the Dead.
Okay.
It's a movie from 1995 about women gunslingers, basically. It had Sharon Stone in it. She was the main woman.
Oh, I
But it
see.
was basically about women cowboy and gunfights, basically.
Okay. So cinema plays a big role in what you do as well.
Absolutely. And for Renaissance, I think for me, one thing that I was inspired by was Rhythm Nation by Janet Jackson. And not necessarily just a song, but I don't know if you remember when she had like a whole short film
Of
of
course.
Rhythm
Yeah,
Nation. Yeah.
of course, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. So I pulled a lot from there also, as far as just inspiring myself and being able to reference, have a reference point for myself.
Wow. And so would you ever consider going into directing? I know, for example, you're a stylist, but one of the things, so a barber I know mentioned to me, for example, that when he gets jobs on movies, they'll send him, for example, the storyline. And if there are black
Yeah.
actors, his job is to create the most realistic hairstyles and haircuts for the era, right? And I asked
Yeah.
him, says, so that in a way is storytelling. Do you yourself want to make your own story? So I'm going to ask you the same question. Are there any ideas that are currently in your mind that you want to see brought to the big screen?
That's a good question. I don't have a concept in mind. And you know, the funny thing about it, I used to be really good at creating music videos in my head. I used to like hear songs and albums and literally have a whole treatment in my head of what things should be. So I don't know if I would do that in regards to movies, but I've definitely had clients that have presented songs to me and I've presented a creative direction towards music videos.
Interesting.
When you think of people like Doja Cat, who Brett is her stylist, but he's also her creative director, and he's done an amazing job doing both. An amazing job.
I see. Okay. That's interesting. I
Yeah.
didn't realize that. So there are instances where
Yeah.
people who are stylists call us a double as a director because they have a set vision, for example, and then one leads into the other.
Absolutely. But it's really important to have an imagination outside of fashion when you're talking about being a creative director also. It's not just about fashion. It's also about an entire era of music or a body of work or a music video. I think a creative director is definitely a whole different world, and I think it's amazing if you're able to be both.
That's amazing. So Vance, if someone's a new artist, for example, right, and they believe they're the person that you need to work with to start from the bottom up, where can they find you? And where can they find you and how should they approach you?
Okay. Well, my Instagram is at Vance Gamble. My email is right in my bio. If you really need to reach out to me, you can reach my assistant, and it's just assistant@vancegamble.com, or you can reach me directly at vancejgamble@gmail.com.
Vance, it's been a great chat. I've learned a lot from up today.
Thank you so much for having me, David. This was like an absolute pleasure.
Of course. All right, talk soon, bro.
All righty. Thank
Bye.
you.
Bye. All right, see you, bro.
Bye bye.
Bye-bye.